Hello
Hello.
and welcome to the Modern Romantic Podcast, where we celebrate and inspire romanticism through passionate people doing incredible things. Hi, I'm etching this memory into my heart. Hi, I'm Trey. And I'm joined by my co-host, who is consistently shaking her head at me with all of my introductions, Emily. Hi, Emily.
Hi, this is me nodding at that. Yes.
Yeah.
But I'm also shaking my head. It's both. It's just... it is a beautiful Sunday, and we're excited to chat with our guest today, who is all the way across the pond in Suffolk, I believe.
Suffolk, yep.
Yeah, Suffolk. And so today we have with us Leslie Pike, a glass engraver with many, many accomplishments and really cool art. So we're excited to talk to Leslie
you.
Today. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm delighted to be here. And I've been watching your videos, and I think you are a great, great couple of appreciative people. There's so many people don't appreciate art like that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
We love being able to give space to people who are unsung heroes. So we love doing it. Thank you.
Thank you.
So you were a glass engraver in like the womb, right? I mean... You're like,
well, put it this way. I've been engraving glass. I scratched my first little scratch on a glass in 1983.
Okay.
That's quite a long time ago. And it was the same year I picked up a golf club as well. So those two have run together. Yeah. So just a little over 40 years I've been engraving and playing golf. But I just never stop engraving, and I never, ever stop learning.
I love
and experimenting.
What got you interested in glass engraving?
I've always painted. I come from a very artistic family. And I saw an article in a magazine, a South African magazine called Your Family, which, you know, in those days, there was no computers or anything. We always used to collect these gorgeous magazines, and we'd pick up recipes and crochet patterns and things like that. And there was a page, or two pages rather, it just caught my eye. And there were these glasses with very, very basic flowers scratched on them. And it said, you know, you can do this, you know. And I just had to find out more. And I didn't have anything to go by. Zimbabwe, there were no big stores and craft stores like you have here. And so, but I was luckily working. I just started working at a medical, dental and laboratory supply company in Zimbabwe and in Harare. And we did a stock take about 2 weeks after I'd read that article. And there was a little dusty old box on a shelf with these little diamond point pencils. It's literally a pencil with a rough diamond point on the end, an industrial diamond. And I thought, well, that's exactly what I saw in the magazine. So I grabbed it because I would never have been able to find it anywhere else. And what they did, they used those to mark the Petri dishes. In the laboratories.
Oh.
And also there was a guy who did glass blowing, basic equipment for their laboratories. And he lent me a book. And in the back, well, it was a book about Lawrence Whistler, who was a very famous glass engraver. And in the back was the address of the Guild of Glass Engravers, and I joined immediately as an overseas member and started to learn basically with correspondence and buying a couple of books and that sort of thing, and just taught myself that way. And I can remember when I went home with one of these diamond points and scratched a glass and held it up to the light outside, and I just could not believe my eyes, because I've actually got a video on my YouTube channel showing what happens when you change, when you move that engraved glass from a light background to a dark background. Within a millisecond, it will change from a negative to a positive. And that is what I saw. And basically, when you scratch the surface, you rough up the surface of the glass, and that catches the light. And the smoother it is, the more the light passes through. And so after that, buying a drill, my first dental technician drill, which I bought from the company I was working at, which I didn't even stay there that long, quite frankly. And I bought this big dental drill, and I was able to put diamond burrs and rubber burrs, stone burrs into that drill and work really, really fast with it. When you put that to a glass, it'll chew it up straight away.
Oh yeah.
And using the stones will smooth out the diamond a little bit, and then using the rubber over the stonework will smooth it out a bit more, and therefore more light passes through, and therefore you can get the various shades of gray, if you like.
Oh sure.
So you can create a rainbow out of grayscale.
Wow.
Just once you know how to use the burrs. And it all depends on, in the drill, what speed you're going, whether you're working wet or dry, whether you're working with a diamond stone or rubber, and which grade they are, whether they are coarse, whether they're medium, whether they're fine, whether you're pressing hard, whether you're pressing light, drill's going fast or slow, and whether the burr itself is old or new. It's just a billion combinations. But before I went on to the drill, in fact, I did find a little old secondhand vibro tool, which is not as rude as it sounds. It just vibrates on the glass. Sorry, guys. It has an industrial diamond or a tungsten carbide point on the end, really, really sharp. And this vibrates on the glass and produced a very, very rough, dotty effect on the glass. Mm. What you would call stipple work, but more of a road digger version of it. It was really rough. But the strangest thing is I still have got a couple of the glasses I engraved right back then with that tool. All the way here in the UK, and I don't even know how I've got them. I've got them somewhere in my cupboard here. Because I'm at work, I can show you a couple of things, which is interesting.
Okay.
There's one. Hang on. I've come prepared.
Oh, yes.
Okay. That is so rough. It's incredible. But I did that with my vibro tool.
Okay.
And on the bottom, it's dated 1984.
Wow. I love
moved
that
on
you still have
little...
it.
I know. It's just amazing because, you know, coming to leaving Zimbabwe and coming here in 2001, I basically dumped everything and just ran. And between friends and family, they were able to help gather some things that I left behind, well, just about everything I left behind. But they sent over a few things, and that was, in fact, those two little glasses were amongst some of the stuff they brought over for me.
Wonderful.
it was amazing.
Risky too, because that could have broken along the way and it didn't. So
I know they're not the best of glass. They're just really tough old boots, those glasses. They're not crystal or anything. But yeah, it's just been an exciting journey. And I love teaching it as well, which is because I watch people go through the same as what I did.
Of course, yeah. Is it so back to the drill for just a minute. I have a question about that. Is it, I don't know, is it standard to use a dental drill, or is that just, that was the tool you found and got lucky with? And
yeah. Well, because Zimbabwe didn't have big craft shops where you could go and get a hobby drill or a Dremel or something like that, that was cheap. There was nothing, absolutely nothing. And in fact, the vibro tool I found in a secondhand shop, and that was really old. But my first big drill I bought because I was at the dental company, right. I wouldn't have known about it. And it wasn't one that they use in your teeth. It was one that the dental technicians use. And a really, really big, heavy duty hanging motor. It's got a flexible drive, like some of the Dremels will have today. You know, it's got a big cord coming down, and that's all the little, I have no idea what goes on inside that flexible drive, but it feeds power to the end. And again, amazingly, I've got that very first drill upstairs. That was incredible, because I didn't bring it with me. I only came over with a rucksack. So it's just amazing. No, you don't have to have a dental drill. The one I use now is actually a very, very high-tech dental technician drill, which is a much finer version. It's has a little handpiece that's very light, like a almost as light as a pencil, really, but not as thin as a pencil. Very precise, super smooth, and those are called micromotors. And a sort of a cheaper version of those you will see they use on the nail technicians use.
Oh yeah, okay.
Yeah, same sort of thing. And usually maximum you would have for glass would be, I would say, about 35,000 RPM. The one I've got, it goes up to 50,000 RPM. So it's a really, and it goes right down to nothing. So I can make it go whatever speed I want. Nice. I can set it at that speed. I can see it on the screen what the speed is. And it's a fantastic machine. But you can start off with a cheap hobby drill, you know, something for next to nothing.
Nice.
The thing is with those, though, they if you really get very keen and you can't stop engraving, they get very hot.
Oh yeah,
because they're just cheap.
I bet.
Yeah, and so it depends on how much money you want to spend, but it's a good way to start if you want to buy a really cheap drill to start and just get a feel of, you know, what it's like.
Right.
I can just about guarantee you will go on and buy something bigger.
And I see you've engraved on other things too. You mentioned crystal. And I had the thought that maybe crystal would engrave differently than regular glass. Would you say that's true?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The lead crystal is a brilliant material. It's brighter. It's softer. It catches the light better. It's just absolutely magnificent. I've got a piece right here.
Oh, of course.
Of course. Of course. And this is one that I'm just about finished right now, and I've just released a video, not to the public, but to my teaching channel. That is a lump of full lead crystal.
Wow.
That's a color to crystal.
That is beautiful.
So that is what basically, it's called the cullet, and that's what the glass blowers may have left at the end of the day, and then as long as they cool it down, which is called annealing, if they anneal it, then it will stay a solid piece and doesn't become, it doesn't fracture and break up. And so then I'm able to engrave on them. I like to collect them. I've got a lot of them that I haven't engraved. Some are this size.
Wow.
They're huge. But they are so soft. They're absolutely beautiful to work on. I don't know all the ins and outs of what, you know, what the ingredients are. I don't work with hot glass.
Right.
But as opposed to soda glass is your really tough, hard glass that maybe the old Coke bottles and stuff like that.
Right. I do some glass fusion myself. So hot glass is more my thing. Not glass blowing, but glass fusion. So there's kiln work. Yeah. So annealing I know about. So I was able to identify with that a little bit. But we've been talking about leaded glass once in a while because of food safeness and things like that. And I wondered if that was, I mean, it, on this end, it melts the same. So I wondered if it engraved the same. But yeah, fascinating.
Right. It's interesting because I've only ever occasionally heard from an American side of things that they worry about the lead content of crystal in, say, for example, a decanter that'll hold alcohol for a long time. And yet I've never, ever heard of anyone being sick from that. I just don't get it. I think people get more sick from plastic, quite frankly.
I agree, because the lead content in the glass we use, that we might use, that's leaded, is not more than a leaded crystal. So right. It must be safe, or they wouldn't sell leaded crystal to drink from.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just beautiful. It's beautiful. And the thing is, when I want a special piece, like a bowl or a vase or something made especially, I get it blown for me. Then it becomes a really, really fancy one-off piece. And quite often I'll have them blown with layers of color so that I can carve through the layers of color. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's brilliant.
It makes Watch me out, think... glass. Here comes Emily.
It makes me think of those. You. Like those, it makes me think of those pottery things. As people are going through, they do multiple pours and multiple dips so that they get layers of color. And as they cut through the layers, you get like this rainbow effect that people can cut through and do different etchings on. My question for you is, with all of this different types of glass or different surfaces that you can etch on, do you have any favorites?
Mm. No. Well, I mean, I would say crystal, not glass. So crystal is always going to be a favorite as opposed to a soda glass. I don't like it. I will engrave it if I have to. If some 18-year-old chap wants to buy his mate his 18th birthday present, you know, with his name on, no problem. I'll put his name on it on a cheap, you know, cheap glass. Absolutely no problem at all. And it'll show up well. But I will not engrave a portrait of someone's dog or a coat of arms on a cheap glass, because it's like doing a magnificent oil painting on a piece of paper. You know, it just is a complete waste of a lot of hard work. And you just lose so much detail. And also, you know, the diamond burrs specifically, all the burrs, but the diamonds, if you're working on tough old glass, they've cost money and they will wear out faster.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And then there's the other thing, is using water. I use water with the diamonds, which makes them last longer. It produces a better cut, and it's just altogether, it lubricates the diamond. But it's by no means law to do that. I mean, there's no such thing as law. You do whatever you like. And there are many, many glass engravers that never use water. But I do like to use water most of the time. And it also keeps down the dust level, because when you're grinding away at glass, you've got dust flying everywhere.
Yes. Yeah. And you don't want to breathe that in either.
You don't want to breathe that in. No. Mask, definitely a must for any engraving on glass. And I've got a dust extractor as well, which is, I'm very fortunate to have that. But as long as you've got a mask, definitely. And then, of course, as I say, if you've got a water drip system that's dripping on the glass, that's going to wash away most of the dust, and it will not be as dangerous. And I have glasses also, and headband magnifier over the glasses. And even if you don't wear glasses, just normal plain glass wear on your eyes to stop the glass spitting, you know, because when it is wet, it will spit and I end up with, you know, hair dotted with mm-hmm. glass. In fact, I go home covered in glass most days.
I can yeah. relate to that. I've had little bits all over the front of my shirt, and
yeah. Oh, brilliant.
Well, yeah. because we'll grind the edges on the glass grinder.
Of course.
So yeah. even if I'm not engraving, although maybe next week I will be engraving.
I think you should try. Absolutely. Like and Trey, go oh, for yeah. it. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, something I might say, Emily, is because you've done a lot of glass fusion, it might also be really cool to not only do the fusion itself, but also etch something on the glass fusion plate that you're...
Yes.
Okay, yep, we're on the same page.
Yeah, because I could do a piece where I melted yes. layers of color on purpose and just yes. to engrave it the way I want. Yeah, I could plan the whole thing from... Yes.
I often try and encourage people that come into my showroom and they say, oh, I do stained glass. But I don't engrave. So I say to them, combine those, mm-hmm. you know, how gorgeous. It's, you know, I'm not interested in stained glass personally, but anyone who does can easily engrave as well.
Oh, that would be, okay. I have images in my head right now. Yep. I have ideas. It's so clear that you have so much experience and so much knowledge when it comes to this. And it's so nice to see, like, you were really a go-getter when it came to learning this craft and seeking out how to improve your skill set over on. As you look back on how you learned to do it versus now you have a YouTube channel, you're instructing others, what are some things that you notice that have changed and some things that have improved compared to when you were learning to engrave glass?
I mean, equipment is pretty much the same, to be honest, and glass is still the same. Crystal's the same. I think that now that basically the only difference is, of course, the fact that anyone learning can simply go online and learn, whereas mm-hmm. I couldn't, and most other people couldn't at the time. And there are still people now who contact me, and in fact, on my Patreon teaching channel, who are based in remote countries where they can't learn unless they find someone like myself to teach them. There are, you know, there are a few, not many universities that do courses here in the UK. I wouldn't say whole courses on drill engraving, but certainly workshops and that sort of thing, weekend workshops. But copper wheel engraving is probably more popular in Europe. In that's a lathe, that's this kind of thing. Okay, basically that is copper wheel engraved.
Okay,
I don't know if you can see that. Okay,
yeah,
like and then it. and then polished. But obviously, copper wheel engraving can create beautiful, almost like same sort of thing as what I can do with a drill, creatures, people, pictures. But that's a completely different technique, and I don't do that at all. But there are more courses at universities that, from what I gather, that you can learn that. And I know, and I've seen pictures in Russia. Oh, my goodness, the people in Russia create the most amazing copper wheel engraving. Absolutely breathtaking yeah. stuff. You know, mm-hmm. big dragons and that sort of thing. But in America, from what I can gather, it's sandblasting. That's the big thing. And stage blasting. So you will have people cutting vinyl, hand cutting vinyl, and then blasting, and then hand cutting some more out, and then blasting. So with sandblasting, I do sandblasting as well, of course. You have a cabinet and a grit. And in my case, I use a very, very fine aluminium oxide grit, okay. which also you will find all over my shoes and clothes and in my hair and everywhere. But that, yeah, that's very popular in America, the stage blasting, and much more so than using a drill.
Fascinating. There is a product, and I'm going to expand everyone's horizons here. There is a product that I'm trying to find the name of it, but it's moldable glass, where you take, at least on my end, on like a glass fusion side, but I could see how maybe it would also lend itself to cool engraving. Mm-hmm. So you take this, it's like a gel, and you add a compound to it. It's a two-part system. So you have this gel and you have this powder and you add it together, and then it makes like a goop, a paste, and then you add, and it kind of creates like a clay, and you add glass powder to it. So in my case, I would add COE96 glass powder to it, and everything burns off except the glass in the kiln. So it creates a clay that is moldable. And so what I'm seeing people do is they'll roll it real flat, like you might roll out for cookies or something like that, where you could take a cutter and carve out any shape. And then they'll use that for their glass pieces. I saw someone yesterday at the art lab with little petals, a tiny little petals on a flower they were making, and they were precise and tiny. They were just perfect. And I thought, how did they get those that perfect? You can't cut glass that perfect. And so I thought they had to use maybe a ring saw, but it was very thin. And then I thought, well, all you have to do is take layers and layers and layers, and you can make as many colors in layers as you want to create a glass that's a normal thickness, like a 3 millimeter, whatever. Goblets and things would be thinner. But you could have 5 different colors of glass in one thickness because of this product. And I believe it's called moldable glass. I will get that answer before the end of the show.
That's really interesting. I don't know that. That's amazing. But to go back, you can precisely cut glass with water jets.
Oh, right.
Yeah, that is another thing. But I know nothing personally about it at all. But I know that it is done. Water is really powerful. So you could probably, I don't know how small you can go, but your petals sound quite small, and that's really interesting. That
the possibilities become pretty large, because you can what you could create out of the glass to engrave it, I'm thinking, could be interesting. I want to go play with that, like, right now. Thank you for coming, everyone.
It makes me kind of think that you might be able to use like those epoxy resin molds to pour it into, if it's malleable enough. That way you could get some use out of both the resin and the glass. That's my mind thinking. Where was I going with that? I don't remember. Emily, I pass it back to you.
Right.
There must be someone out there doing that. So that's going to be, is it Sandra? Her next email will be to somebody who does that kind of work.
Yeah, that's how things happen around here all the time. Yeah.
I love it. I'd be really interested to see that.
It looks like Kaz in the chat is very interested in taking, she does a lot of leather work, and she wants to incorporate glass with leather, like specifically stained glass was her comment. And I could see that being kind of neat, because she's done like leather horse armor, for instance. Interesting things like that. So she was talking about ways she could make that happen. So Kaz and I are going to talk later, because we have some cool ideas that we can maybe mesh together.
Yeah. I've often, because I make crystal jewelry as well.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'll quite often carve an old piece of hand-blown lead crystal, and then usually color overlay. So I've carved through the color as well, which is basically called cameo engraving.
Okay.
And then use leather for the finding, a leather thong, something like that, as a chain.
Mm-hmm.
And crystal and leather is a good combination. It's really interesting.
And Kaz said, Leslie, you are amazing.
Oh, thank you.
Seeing that, you should go see her website. It maybe not right now, maybe after the show. And that is lesliepyke.com, LeslyPyke.com. And we'll post that with the episode as well, so everybody can visit and look at her art. It's amazing. It is amazing. Kaz is correct.
You. Thank you. Cheers. Oh, that's great.
Let's see, on the teaching and the educating side, say someone comes to you and wants to learn from you, either as an apprentice or take one of your classes or has watched your YouTube videos and has additional questions. What is the one question you wish people would ask you more when it comes to like learning about glass engraving?
Ooh, okay, that's an interesting one. Funny enough, the first thing that comes to mind is one that people don't really think about, and it's the first thing I want to say. It's the first thing that hits me when they show me their work, and that, and everyone out there who knows me will know exactly what I'm going to say because it winds me up so much, and that's negative, positive, negative, positive. Because if you imagine when you're drawing on a piece of paper with a black pencil, simple as that, white paper, black pencil, you're going to draw the shading, the darkness. When it comes to glass engraving, you have got to do the complete opposite of that because you are coloring the light.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a while to get your head around that and begin a glass engraving. You can see straight away if they've done a cat or a dog or a face, whatever, and including even big companies that produce glass for golf awards and that sort of thing. It just is the most simplest thing to sort out. But if you don't get it right in your head, you don't engrave it right, you end up with a negative. So you're going to get this golfer on an award, and he's got white eyes, an outlined face. And the first thing you've got to have is dark eyes. You know, if you're looking at an animal, that's dark in the eye, and then work out from there. And so, for example, if someone wants me to engrave a black Labrador, I will say to them, I have to make him really shiny. Otherwise, he will just not exist on the glass because the glass is deemed black because it's going to show up best with a dark background, any engraving, obviously, because your engraving is white.
Yeah.
So newbies that are starting glass engraving, that is what I need them to know first, whether they ask me about it or not. That is, they won't even think to ask me that. And that's what I want them to know across the world. And I've got to say, the British passport, if you look at the British passport cover, it's on a dark background and it's got a light coat of arms or whatever the image.
Similar, right.
And it's a negative. It is a negative. And it should have been created so that it looks like a positive on that.
Oh, you're right. I just Googled it. If you just Google British passport, it'll pop up.
Can you see their white eyes?
The lion's eyes are light and the unicorn's eyes are light. And
it should be the other way around.
I see.
And there are ways to work it out. I mean, sometimes you work outwards, and there will be times where something has to have a bit of an outline, you know, but you work it up. But the most important thing is that in the middle of the image, it looks positive. And so sometimes if you've got to do company logos, because I do a lot of commercial stuff because I sandblast, and I find some of them are incredibly challenging. Even the most simplest logo can be challenging because it's the light and the dark thing, and they will have specific regulations on this is what it must look like on a piece of paper. This is what it must look like on a t-shirt. This is my, whatever. But I have to change them, and I have to try and tell them what it has to look like when I'm doing it on glass. And it's really difficult sometimes because they don't want it changed, but it's not going to work otherwise. So you are incredibly challenged, and especially if there's colors, and they give you a logo and it's got about four basic colors in it. That already is a problem because you've got white and black. Okay, yes, if you're doing a one-off hand engraved piece, you can put all sorts of shading, as I said. But if you are having to do 100 glasses sandblasted, then you have got a problem because it's basically going to be black and white, you know, white on clear glass. And that artwork has to be tweaked so that it looks positive.
Yeah, so you I see that. I looked at the U.S. passport as well, and ours is the same. There's an eagle, and its eyes are white.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. Why?
Yeah. I don't think they think of that. But you know what? I love this conversation because this is how we change the world with art.
Exactly.
Yeah. So if any government officials are listening, no, I won't tell you my secrets, but you should change the artwork on the passports.
Exactly. Oh my gosh, yes. That's so funny.
You have custom orders come in probably all the time. Do you have, like, what are some of your larger orders? What do they look like? Like, large, are we talking 100 pieces, 1,000 pieces?
I draw the line at 1,000 pieces. No, I won't do 1,000 pieces.
That's a lot.
No. Because I work entirely alone and I am an artist, so I need to be able to create as well. Otherwise I'll go loopy-de-loop. Mm-hmm. So I don't take on too many. I'd say probably 100 is the most that I've done in my workshop lately. But I do travel for my work, and I did travel to Qatar a couple of years ago in the middle of the pandemic, and I had to work for the royal family, and I did over 200 perfume bottles, or bottles of perfume.
Wow.
And those are all by hand. So in fact, you have a lot of ladies and gentlemen in USA who sit in stores like I do from time to time and engrave bottles, perfume, booze, all sorts. And it is a fun thing to do. It's different. But then you just go full tilt. You just got your drill and you're just putting names and little messages endlessly on bottles. And then you can do lots and lots of those. And I do enjoy that. Obviously, that's not something I want to do all the time, but it is a complete break, and it's random, it's bizarre, it's usually in a totally different place. And I've actually got a big one coming up, which I probably won't mention just yet.
Okay. Just watch the place. We'll just have to watch your news that you post.
But put it this way, it's not on dry land.
Oh,
yeah. And that's going to be a first for me. I don't even know if I'll be able. Yeah, I'm sure I'll be able to do it. It's a big vessel. But there's so many different ways and techniques to engrave out there. And I love exploring them all and teaching them all. But there are many that I don't know and I don't teach and I don't use.
But how fun. That sounds like you have found ways to keep it exciting and interesting, even if once in a while you have a lot of production work where it's monotonous. Or
it's got to pay the overheads.
Right.
Yeah. Do you ever do any collaboration work with other glass engravers?
Not with other glass engravers, but with other artists, yes. I have on several occasions had an artist bring their art, their drawing, and asked me to put it on something. And I have done that. One that comes to mind was a beautiful jug, tall crystal jug that we both chose together. And she had done this quite contemporary drawing of trees, tall trees going all the way around with writing going all up the sides of the trunks and then branches. And it was just lovely. And so we collaborated. And then at the bottom, of course, I sign it myself and her as well. That was great fun. But not with other glass artists. No. It's a funny thing that there's not many of us around, to be honest. And there's right. there's no one near me, not for many miles. I know there are glass artists that have collaborated. For example, when I can think of some where one is a calligrapher and the other does calligraphy but more decorative images and that sort of thing, and them combining their work works really, really well. I tend to use my computer to design a lot, you know. I use a program called Coral Draw.
Oh yeah.
And I love it. I've been using Coral Draw since it first came out, in the 80s or whenever it was. And when I first had my first computer, I mean, crumbs, that's a long time ago. And it's like having a magic wand and being able to just create anything and make it to the size that you want. And of course that's brilliant for sandblasting and as well. But with bigger pieces that I think you asked about big pieces I'd done in the past, my biggest ever was a set of sliding doors around a swimming pool area in Zimbabwe. Wow. And it was dear friends of mine. And I had not long been engraving, and I had my great big drill hanging from a ladder. And I sat there, being Africa, it was hot, and I did it on the outside, which I wouldn't do it in this country. I would work on the inside of the glass, but I was on the outside of the glass in all those commissions I did. It was really, really hot, and it was a covered in area anyway. And I did bamboo and a big, still not sure whether it was a moon or a sun to this day, but anyway, lots of bamboo and mountains spread around the sliding doors, because in Africa it's really hot, and we had big houses and big sliding doors, and people, animals would walk into them. And so I would often be asked to come and put a decoration on there so that people can see, because they're spotlessly clean, you can't see them if it's open or closed,
right,
and
it's right.
very dangerous. Yeah. Then I used to make vinyl stickers as well that look like sandblasting, and then stick them on if someone's renting a property, for example, and they can't have something permanent on there, then I would create stickers and go and stick them even down the bottom for their little dogs.
Oh.
Yeah.
Were you an artist first? Like, did you already sketch and draw? And okay.
Oh yeah. Yeah. My mom and dad painted. I literally was born into a household that smelt of turpentine and there was just paints. And still to this day, my mom paints, and my dad unfortunately has passed away, but I have our lounge I've just got paintings all around the lounge. And, born into a family of artists, and I was my first commission. I think I was 13 or 14 years old. A friend's mum wanted me to paint a painting. Loved it.
That's
love it.
Wonderful.
I don't often paint anymore, except I paint these little things. I paint these little things. Hang on with me.
That's so wonderful.
That's my latest little thing. You got to do different things, you see, in life.
Yes.
And so I've got a laser, because I just happen to have a laser now. And so I cut it out and paint and then go and do markets. Something different.
Yeah, that is very different. But it's still you. I love it. And you clearly have your own sense of style there too.
Do you think so? Well, it's funny you should say that because I don't think I've got a style. Because no? People ask me to do, they ask me to do anything from something contemporary to something really frilly and feminine and flowery, and then I'll go back to something really wacky, and then I'll be doing something like that, you know. And then when it comes to me having time to put something in a gallery and I've got to create something, you know, a work of art, a collectible piece, I sit there and I don't know what to do.
Because you've been doing everybody else's designs and now yeah. you have your own to think about. And
yeah,
I can relate to that to some degree. But I mean, I thought your painting style seemed clear to me, but maybe I'm wrong.
That's... It's literally just a little acrylic pens. So you're painting with a little yeah. marker pen, basically. So, and I love doing hairy things because, of course, when you're working with glass and a drill, I love hair. You know, yeah. hair on an animal is just brilliant to do. It's so much fun.
I'll have to try that then.
Yeah, you can give it lots and lots of depth. You build layers. It's like painting. And one of my nicknames is paints with diamonds, because that's basically what I'm doing is I'm painting with diamonds.
I could see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My palette is all the rubbers and stones and that sort of thing.
So have you filled your home with your own work too then, in addition
no.
to your paintings?
No.
No?
No. What cobbler has good shoes?
Right?
I mean.
That's true. That's true.
and in fact, home is where I break the glass in the sink. It's just when I'm here, my glass is my baby, you know, and I don't, you know, you just don't break it. But well, I do sometimes, but not very often, I can tell you. But at home, I frequently break glass, you know, because I get home and it's just mad rush and washing up and bit
up
tired.
To be as careful, right?
Yeah.
Trey, you had a question.
So for your own pieces where you're not doing a commission, where does your inspiration come from?
Quite often it's to do with what I might have been doing just recently, you know, for somebody. It might put me in a mood, you know, to do something. I haven't got it with me, but one of my favorite pieces is also a cullet of crystal like this, but it was during the lockdown when the first lockdown, when we all got this weird COVID stuff going on and it was frightening and nobody knew what was going on and all the new phrases and terms and things were, you know, instructions and places. And so I created a huge crystal cullet in my spare room at home when we were all stuck there. And I put on there the words. I kept them all on a piece of paper and eventually stopped and just put them all over this cullet of crystal. So that, to me, was like your classic artist moment. We think, oh, I've got to do this. I've got to capture that. That is important. And that will last forever. And, you know, providing nobody goes and drops it, but if they don't drop it, it'll last for millennia. It's crazy. But so that was, I wish I had more time to do that kind of thing. And I don't know, that's just lovely. And then you get something, I got another piece at hand, to hand. Yeah, this was a vase. This was a broken vase.
Oh.
And so I put my sleepy face, and you will notice that I did one specific thing for fun, and that is I did it as a negative.
Oh, sure you did.
Come on! I gave myself wide eyes. I just outlined everything, and I just did it, and that's the only time I've ever done that. But this was a broken vase and really, really lovely thick crystal. And I couldn't bear the thought of throwing it all away. So that is me. And I just did oak trees, acorns and stuff like that. There's there's two acorns there. Those are my kids.
It's kind of ethereal, though. You took something broken that someone might throw away, and you made it beautiful, and that's so cool.
That's another little arty moment.
Yeah.
And that's what I, if I didn't have to pay overheads, that's what I would want to do all the time. I've got a lot of blank crystal all over the place, you know, in my, up in my workshop and in the cabinets, just waiting for something to go on there. And it's just time, really. And I can't wait to put stuff on there.
Do you
they kind of look at me and wait and just sort of, come on, Liz, what are you going to do?
I'm still sitting here.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you make pieces ever for something like this? You said there's an event coming up that you have like a table at that you are selling your pieces. Do you just paint for those types of things, or do you do some glass engraving and bring those?
Do you mean the big one offshore? Or was this the other? Oh, there is a big spring market coming.
That's
up.
What I was thinking of. Yes.
Yeah, that one. Yeah. Now that one is that's going to be a combination of my smaller pieces. And then a whole lot of my wooden bits as well.
Okay.
And often when I do these sort of things, it's more like an advertising exercise, because it's not far down the road. It's about half an hour, if that, down the road. And a lot of people locally don't know that I exist, because you don't think about glass engraving.
True.
It's just, you just don't think about it. If you don't know it, you know, you don't search it if you don't know it. And that's has always been a challenge for me. So I have to put myself out there all the time to try and get people's attention. The little wooden things are just an extra. They add color to the table, and they just because I enjoy doing them. But I will have a lot of small pieces, and a lot of the small pieces I do, they'll be animals and little scenes going around a glass. A lot of those are what I have done for my Patreon teaching channel, and I filmed them from start to finish. And what I love about that is the fact that I have to think of something new all the time. And they know me. I make 3 videos a month, and I have to be creative, because if I didn't have that channel, I probably would be getting on with the next commercial order, you know, rather than being creative. But I have to teach them from scratch how to engrave a dog's eye, how to engrave a spider, how to engrave hair, you know. And so things like that, I start off with a whole scene. And there's someone will say to me, please, can you show me how, the one lady wanted to know how to put a scene on the background that doesn't affect what you put in the front so much. Mm-hmm. Like I did a landscape and trees and hills in the background, and then a little a muntjac, which in this country, I don't know if you have them there, but it's like a little mini deer.
Yeah, I know what they look like anyway. Yeah. We don't have them here, but I wish we did.
They're so cute. And so to have that in the front, and you don't, if you've got engraving in the front and if you slap some engraving, heavy engraving in the back, they will clash. And every time you hold it up, you'll never be able to see that really clearly unless you put something inside the glass. And even then, that's terrible. I hate it when you put something inside the glass, because that flattens it. Mm-hmm. And so I had to teach them how to do a soft landscape. That's there, but the deer in the front really shows up well. So that's just another subject, and how to do water and fish and that sort of thing.
And these are things,
so I really,
these are
those
things
are the little
can find
things
on your Patreon, right?
Yeah, okay. That's right. And and what I take to these markets, because they're small, they're easy to carry, they're interesting, they're not too expensive. And so, you know, and it shows what I can do.
So if somebody wanted to buy a piece of yours, the best way to do that is to maybe commission you or go to one of these markets.
Yeah, or look at my website. I actually haven't got I haven't got everything that's in my showroom on my website. And when I say my website, it's actually, can I say a brand name of a shop?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's an Etsy shop. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I have a little Etsy shop. And so there's not a huge amount in there. I don't keep it up, but only because of time and taking photographs and all that sort of thing. They can go on there and they can buy straight up.
Good to know.
Whatever I've got on there. Yeah. Otherwise, people come in here and commission stuff all the time, or they email me from anywhere. I post all over the world, and that's been an interesting thing as well, because I have to pack them really well. Like those three decanters are in New York. And I've done a few like that, and they've had to go overseas to America.
Right. And so just for our listening audience, the decanter she's talking about is a set of three with a ship that actually, like, is across all three of them. So it only will show a whole ship if you put the three together.
Yeah. It's really and they have neat. To be absolutely perfectly synchronized. I work them taped together, literally. And I had one previous customer actually contacted me and said, can you redo the middle one? And they're in America. And I said, well, no, not without the others. And because someone on the yacht had actually put a liqueur in, and it had gone all sugary on the stopper, and they couldn't get it off. So they poured boiling hot water over it. And the whole thing cracked. And so probably not a good idea to do that.
Yikes.
And they were coming out to the UK, and they brought the three decanters. And while they were here, I completed the middle one again to match the others. And so I had to basically tweak the others. I worked the middle one while I had the others there taped with it, and I had to blend it into the others, because you don't know what, I can't remember what burrs I used or what speed I was using. You cannot do it separately. It's got to be the same.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they were really happy, and off they went again with their three decanters.
Wow.
It's sad that it broke, but it was really challenging and really different to do that.
Right. Yeah, well, there's a lot of real smooth lines and things to show, like the.
Yeah, that's a combination of sandblasting and hand engraving. That is where I combine, because to hand engrave a perfect straight line is really difficult.
I bet.
And there are engravers who do that beautifully, although I can see straight away it's done by hand, and I'm just fussy. And I like that line to be absolutely perfect. And then I go in like with all the shading and the texture of the water, and then, you know, all those windows where they look dark, they're actually engraved and then polished out. Because if you just leave them as clear glass, it will look like there's nothing there.
Right.
There's not a window. There's just nothing there. So you need to work the surface completely so that it comes to the surface and it all becomes one surface, just different shade. And that's another thing I teach my students is to polish back. If you have got a drill and you have got rubbers and you're able to polish, that's really important, that you don't leave holes in things. You know, people do leopards, and where the spots are, they just leave holes, and they'll shade part of the body, but those black spots, they'll just leave as blank glass, and it looks like the leopard's been shot many, many times, you know.
Oh, no.
Now, the only time it really works is if you're doing a mask, you know, just what are those masks that you go to a ball? Okay.
Oh, like a masquerade mask. Yeah.
A masquerade mask. And so those eyes are actually empty. And that can be a really pretty thing on a glass, a masquerade type mask. And where those eyes are, you don't put anything. That is clear, clear, clear glass. And that is very effective. Because as soon as you put any kind of shading on that, it will look like it's got a cellophane covering.
Right. It changes it.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah. I know. And if you're doing a skull, skulls are beautiful on glass. But you do need to polish that because there's the back of the skull behind the hole that you've got to be able to see there's something there.
Oh.
So.
If you're doing like a three-dimensional skull.
Yeah. Which is the best way to do a skull. I just love the idea of being able to just crawl into that eyeball.
Right.
No, I'm not weird. It's just to be able to get the effect is excellent.
No, I get that. A lot of my friends have things with skulls on them from a very aesthetic perspective, and they can be incredibly artistic. Sometimes they can be used creepy. Sometimes they can just be like, I don't know, like an 18th century like aesthetic choice. So, no, I totally get that.
Yeah. I mean, we've all got one.
It's a little, I find it a little macabre that we decorate with our own skulls and at times as human beings. Mm. I find that fascinating. It's something I've always, same with bones, like a skull and crossbones flag, maybe for a pirate, or just in general, that we would put skulls on things as decor is especially our own skull. You know, I feel like it's different maybe when it's like a deer or something, but our own skulls are, I don't know, that's a little darker to me. But
maybe it's because of pirates that represents sort of sword fights and stabbing, and maybe because of poison that means you're going to die if you drink this, so they put a skull on it. You know, maybe that in the old days, maybe thousands of years ago, they were celebrated. I don't know.
And now it's just cool to have a skull on. My skull tattoo or whatever. I don't have one, but
no, me neither. I know people do ask, is that sugar art thing? I don't know what the sugar art thing is. I'm personally not into it myself, but I do get asked these things and I do enjoy doing them. And the sugar art is the skull with lots of flowers and stuff going on. And I don't really, I think it's some kind of festival or something. I don't know.
I don't know much about it either.
Somebody will know.
I know what you're talking about, but yeah.
I kind of see that more with like Dia de los Muertos, like the flowers with skulls. And I see it more with that. But I know what you're talking about outside of that cultural reference. I just don't have a name for it.
No.
Yeah, same. Maybe we need somebody on the show that can explain that to us a little better.
Yeah,
it's an art form.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Oh, I absolutely, this is why I love what you do, because I love each to their own kind of thing. You know, there's so many different beliefs and different artistic types out there. They might look at this kind of work and yawn, you know. Absolutely, anything that I do.
Hopefully not.
Well, I mean, there's just so many tastes out there, which is what makes the world go round, which I absolutely love.
Yes, so much flavor.
Doing this kind of show has broadened my perspective on things, and it's more so because people have talked about it. And when I listen to people talk about what they love to do, then I'm a little bit more invested because I have like a connection point to that art. Sometimes I find when I'm looking at someone's art and I don't really have that, and I don't have like the story that goes behind it, I don't have a story to like draw me into it, it becomes a little bit disconnected for me with that. But in having a podcast like this and you talking about your engraving, or our last episode having someone who is a glass blower.
Oh, watch that. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Jonathan. Yeah, absolutely. Because I love what's it called?
Blown Away.
Blown Away.
Yeah.
Love it. Sorry, I interrupted you, Trey.
Oh, no. It was so fun. And so really, this is just to all of our past guests and to you. It's just so nice to be able to have that like level of understanding and grow as an artist myself by having this sort of platform.
Yeah, I agree. I think all artists throughout time have been inspired by previous artists, no matter what it is. That is for sure. That's why we just grow and grow.
Yes. We learn something every week. We do on this show, for sure. Hopefully our audience is too.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure they do. Yeah. I'll definitely be sharing your, when I go through all your other videos, I'll be sharing some that really stick out.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. I've already shared a couple. I think they're absolutely fantastic.
Thank you so much. We appreciate that.
Well, Leslie, I have two last questions for you, and these are some that we ask on every episode, and we want to make sure that we ask them to you as well. My first one is, what is your one piece of advice to people who are just getting into glass engraving?
Right.
Like me.
Watch my...
Yes. What is your advice to Emily?
Watch my YouTube channel. It's free. It's not the paying one. To get into that, I explain very clearly as I'm going along what I'm doing. And admittedly, there are some really old videos on there of mine. But if you go jump to the more up-to-date ones that I have released from my teaching channel, they're getting a little bit better because obviously I'm no... Steven Spielberg, but I try very hard and I'm getting better at that. But I video closely and I explain what I'm doing, why I'm doing it, what I'm using, mm-hmm. and what I can't deal with, unfortunately, is the flow of questions that come to me with photographs. And I know you guys love to send photographs and it's really, really sweet, but I can't cope with them. That's why I started the teaching channel, because then at least if I answer a question, it's usually on the live chat, then everyone gets to hear the answer straight away. And if you pay for a higher tier, then I can do one-to-ones, you know, and it's not that expensive, but at least I'm getting an income from it. And that's really important.
It is.
Especially in this day and age, you just can't cope otherwise.
Right.
And not be afraid of glass. That's something that if you want to try glass engraving, it's not going to bite you. The glass is not going to smash and explode. And if you've got a Dremel drill somewhere in the shed, just get it out, put a diamond in it, and go very carefully, just quietly, just make a mark on the glass and grow from there. And once you start, watch out, milk bottles, car windscreens, you name it.
Oh, good ideas.
Yeah.
Thank you. And now I'm your new local vandal. What advice do you give to somebody who maybe doesn't feel like they can already draw or sketch?
Oh, that's an easy one.
Is it?
That's an easy one. It's a transparent medium. Cut out a picture from a kid's coloring book, stick it behind the glass, trace it.
All right. Easy. Ooh. You're right. All right.
Yeah. I don't do that personally. No, but a lot of the time I will create the artwork or use someone's photograph of their dog that will go behind the glass and I'll get the eyes in the right place, the nose in the right place, you know.
Yeah,
it's really important if you're doing a portrait that you get it right. And we've got a transparent medium. There are ways and means of getting it onto a surface of, for example, a bottle or a decanter that you can't get inside of, but you know, I teach all those sort of things.
Okay,
but just don't be afraid.
No, Dive in. We say that every
Dive
week.
In. Dive yep. in.
Yes.
That is a great piece of advice. And my second question is, I want to make sure that our listening audience can stay in touch with you. What social media would you recommend that our listening audience gravitate towards, keep up for updates? Like, where can they connect with you the best?
Okay, Facebook. I update probably mostly on Facebook and Instagram. And I can't remember what my... Some links are Glass Engraving, some are Glass Engraver. I can't remember. So
I can tell you. Instagram is Leslie_Pike_Glass_Engraver. And Facebook is Glass Engraver.
Yeah. And I think Patreon as well is Glass Engraver. Glass Engraving.
Glass Engraving.
Goodness. I need to
take a treat. I just want our audience to have it right, and I will post Absolutely. This with the episode so everyone Fantastic. Will have all of the links they need.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant. But I do update Facebook probably first and Instagram, and probably not a lot else. Yeah.
Okay.
Nice. And then to call out where they can see other pieces of your work, you also have a website, lesliepike.com, that we called out earlier in the episode. So I want to make sure that we call that out as well.
We'll do that.
Absolutely lovely. Thank you so much. That is something that I keep up to date myself, so it might be a little bit out of date. Yeah. But there are just hundreds of photographs on there of previous works.
Yes, it's so much, and it's so amazing to see the scope of your work on there, and whether you keep up with it or not, it's amazing, and so everyone Thank should go you. Look at it.
Thank you. Something popped on the bottom of the screen. Was it? Was I supposed to read that?
No, it was just for our audience to see the links to everything.
Oh, brilliant! Okay.
Well, Leslie, I have to say, this last hour with you has been incredible. You are such a genuine and genuinely funny person.
Thank you.
But your art also speaks for itself. So I really appreciate you spending time with us and sharing your amazing story with us.
Thank you. It's been an absolute honor. It really, really has. Really, really enjoyed myself. Thank you both very much.
I did too. Yeah, this was great. We'd love to have you back sometime.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Update you with my latest.
Oh, yeah.
Great.
Once you get back from your latest project.
Yes.
Right on the water. That one.
Yeah, that one. Well, that won't be that creative, but it'll be fun.
Well, as we close this episode out here today, this episode, along with probably every other episode for now and forever, will be dedicated to Joe Capone, our moderator, fellow comedian, passionate encourager, and greatly missed friend. You can find us pretty much wherever you tune into podcasts. For updates, announcements, and more, follow us on social media under Modern Romantic. Thanks, everybody, and go dive headfirst into some glass engraving.
Have a scratch.
Have a scratch.
Have a scratch. Yeah, don't go dive headfirst into glass. Make sure it's engraving or scratching. Not just glass.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.